It's that time of year again. There's a snap in the air, the veil between this world and the next is thinning, and ghouls of all descriptions come out of the woodwork.
And, Bubble Genius, it's time to scare up some bath time fun with a kooky collection of spooky suds.
Need something frightful for your Halloween party guests? Get them Hallow Clean with a terrifying selection of bubbly body parts, including our anatomically correct human heart soap.
Need something cool to celebrate Day of the Dead? Alter your consciousness and your bathtub with our hand-painted sugar skull soaps, large and small. Each is a one-of-a-kind work of art.
If you want to bring home some really blood-curdling bubbles, think Election Day! We've got your Obamas and Romneys right here, and even a little Santorum.
Ew.
One-third of the profits donated to progressive causes.
Halloween, Day of the Dead, and Election Day. Bubble Genius can suds you up no matter what the occasion.
We are Bubble Genius, and we approve this message.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Today you're in for a special treat. I am honored to introduce to you a man who is really making an impact in our entire country today. His voice is heard by millions on the radio, and he's seen on TV. He's probably one of the most popular hosts you have on TV today. His approach is refreshing, and that he tries to focus his message on action, on actually making a difference, on learning the principles of freedom and liberty, on standing up and making your voice heard, on reading and applying the wisdom of our nation's founders to the challenges of today. I'm proud, therefore, to introduce to you my friend and a statesman in his own right, Glenn Beck. Very best, Glenn. Show him how it's done.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Pleasure is just a click away with radio as your guest. There's no quicker way, so click away. Radio does the rest.
Here we go!
Thank you, Dr. Pepper, and thank you, Chancellor, or Dr. Paper, and thank you, Chancellor.
Even call centers was rushed overseas in the hundreds of thousands. How many times you get the call? I'd like to talk to you about your credit card.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, October 11th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I am Bob, that is Chez. We are brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Your products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Yeah, I'm kind of insane today. I'm kind of frantic. I'm like all over the place. As I'm sure you are, Chez.
Yes, I always am.
It's just one of those days. It's one of those times where just the news is flying all over the place. It's like I feel like I'm in one of those contest booths where all the free money flies around. That's except instead of money, it's tweets and Facebook posts and breaking news and polls and information about the vice presidential debate tonight, which. We're recording this show in the afternoon prior to the debate. The show will probably go live maybe a half an hour before the debate goes, before the debate begins. So we have no idea what's going to happen.
Really? Oh, that's too bad. I was really hoping that this would appear after.
Yeah.
Well, that way I could just say now, we could say in the recap, wasn't it amazing that moment when Biden called Ryan a punk and then kicked a midget in the balls?
Hey, did you see, speaking of Paul Ryan, did you see the beefcake photo shoot of him and BuzzFeed?
I did not, and I'm not really sure I want to.
Well, it's not even that. BuzzFeed referred to it as beefcake, D-bag photo shoot that Time Magazine did with Paul Ryan from last year. Right. It's supposed to be like hunky Paul Ryan, but you know what it looks like? It looks like Paul Ryan as a cast member of Alvin and the Chipmunks in a weight room. I mean, it's like Paul Ryan on a weight bench, on an old rickety weight bench, and he's got some dumbbells, and he's wearing like a gray t-shirt and some gym shorts, and then he's wearing like a red baseball cap, like a Fred Durst D-bag red baseball cap turned backwards.
Excellent.
And then he's got this smarmy grin as he's pumping iron. I mean,
he did it all for the nookie.
It was from a year ago, and Time Magazine released that photo shoot today. Thank you for that. Good timing. We're getting ready for the big vice presidential debate tonight. I don't know that, and Ezra Klein tweeted something like this just as we were starting the show. Has there ever been a vice presidential debate that's actually changed the polls or changed the narrative? Now, I think those two things are quite different, obviously, as you mentioned the narrative at the top of the show. I think that, from what I can recall, I don't think that there's been any time when it's changed the polls significantly. Maybe a little tweak here or there, but as far as changing the narrative, at least temporarily, it does.
I think it does temporarily, and I think that as much as there is hemorrhaging coming from the Obama campaign, and I don't think there's that much, but certainly last week's performance hurt, I think that it has the potential to at least stave that off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what you need. It's you know, I've said it twice now about how important the narrative is, the media narrative. And when I say media, I mean media coming from, as you described, the freaking money room. Mm-hmm. All these insane, you know, the echo chamber, man, the tweets and the Facebook posts and the blog posts and all that. You know, I'm talking about that kind of media. Everybody basically saying sort of the same thing, or everybody just sort of contributing to the, I don't want to call it the noise, but you know what I mean, the political noise, everybody having their say. I think that sort of, you know, I mentioned that twice now about how important that is. And Steve Kornacki over at Salon, you know, wrote a piece today that essentially said the same thing. It said that, you know, the media narrative is important. And another week of sort of bad headlines for Barack Obama out of the Obama camp, you know, if should Biden lose and lose badly, you know, really get his ass kicked. It's just more bad news, and it's just not something you need.
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing that will happen out of the debate is just by default, the page will turn and the discussion will be what was talked about during the vice presidential debate. I think that's going to be the biggest turning point. And
I'll tell you, though, I do hate to say I told you so, but I mean, you and I talked about it last week, and you know, you wondered very wisely, very sagely, that, you know, would, because you're coming from a place of reason, of logic and reason,
yeah,
that says that a debate, And even a change of narrative, of media narrative, shouldn't have an impact on people who've already made up their minds.
Yeah.
And my contention is that that's just not the way people think anymore. That, man, the hype that comes from every single angle now about this. You know, Matt Taibbi wrote an amazing article, I think it was today or yesterday, that showed up in his Rolling Stone blog, where he said that nothing would be better than to basically eliminate all polling and all political coverage, save for like maybe 2 months. Mm-hmm. And that way, the media, you know, the mainstream media would be forced to cover actual issues instead of turning it into, you know, a horse race, which really diminishes the process, diminishes our you know, our view of the process as Americans. And yeah, I mean, the bottom line here is that it's just, again, it's so much noise, it's so much things can change in such an instant now, and I really expected, after watching last week, after watching the sort of how much Romney, as much as he lied his ass off, how you know, strongly he took it to Obama, and how much Obama kind of faltered, you know, I really did expect that was going to have an impact at the polls, and sure enough, yeah, it does. That's just, I don't know, it's just the way people think now.
They
get sucked in.
But I wasn't denying, when we talked about this last week, and I forget which show we talked about it on, I wasn't denying that a presidential debate can have an effect on polling in a short-term way. And I think that's exactly what happened. I mean, Mitt Romney won the debate. He got a bump in the polls. The extent of which we're not entirely sure, although it looks like, as of, you know, late yesterday, today, it looks like it's leveling off. What I meant when I talked about this last week is that it doesn't really impact the final result of the election.
It doesn't usually happen.
And the big example that I always cite is 2004. John Kerry was 8 points behind in 2004. easily won that first debate against George W. Bush. Ended up climbing to 1 point ahead within a week of George W. Bush. I mean, he was actually, John Kerry was actually leading George W. Bush from an 8-point deficit after, as a consequence of the first debate. And of course, you know, we all wish, you know, President Kerry well as he completes his 8 years and 2 terms as president. But, you know, so I certainly think that there can be a lot of social media hysteria, cable news hysteria happening as a result of a debate, or, you know, one way or another, whether it's panic over a poor performance or, you know, exultation after a good performance. I still don't know how much of a long-term impact that actually has. You know, once again, we are seeing leveling off of Romney's polling. The president's still securely ahead in Ohio, which is important. It's still just neck and neck everywhere. I think given the volume of the hysteria that was happening over the past week, it's really not putting Romney securely ahead anywhere, not even in the national polls. I think he's got maybe a 1-point lead here or there. The Gallup daily tracking poll yesterday, and this is the likely voters poll, had the president and Romney tied at 48-48. The registered voters poll, which is a little more broad, had the president still ahead by 5 points, 50-45, and the president's approval rating is at 53%, which is pretty big. And I read a study, it was sometime in the last year or so, that, you know, any president who's above 50% going into reelection usually gets reelected. So that's another good sign. So I think the bleeding has more or less stopped going into the vice presidential debate. And the thing to watch tonight and tomorrow and the next day, is it going to actually resuscitate the patient now? Is the narrative going to change as much? Well, the Democrats and the Obama campaign are re-energized now, and they're poised to take back the narrative, initiative.
Yeah, I think that if it's a decisive win for Biden, I think if Biden really pummels him, and he has the potential to, you know, this could end in more than likely it'll end in, you know, in the usual draw, which is both sides kind of claiming victory and spinning it to their advantage. But yeah, I mean, I think that if he decisively kicks his ass, that, yeah, I think that will sort of get things again to change the narrative and get a bunch of people saying, you know, just, okay, it's like Kornacki said today, it's nothing but, you know, it's a week's worth of headlines about how Biden took it to Paul Ryan. And exposed him, you know, one would hope, exposed him for being the piece of crap charlatan that he is.
And, you know, Joe Biden spent the last 6 days prepping for this debate, probably many more hours and days prior to that. But, I mean, the last 6 days have been rock solid debate prep. I mean, Joe Biden hasn't been on the stump. He hasn't been campaigning. So he's just been doing nothing but that. He's already naturally good with, for lack of a better term, he's actually good with a zinger. I mean, he came up with probably the most memorable line out of any of the presidential debates in 2008. I mean, he had that great line about noun verb and 9/11 regarding Giuliani.
Yeah,
and that was at least the primary debates. That was the I think the most memorable thing that was said in all of those 30 different debates that they had throughout 2007-2008. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of potential for Joe Biden to do well. I've never seen Paul Ryan in the context of a debate. I have no idea.
Paul Ryan doesn't like to be questioned. Yeah. He's proven that.
Yeah.
He doesn't like to be taken to task.
I think he's also going to very severely challenge Paul Ryan on his positions and on the campaign's positions.
I think you're right. And then in order to in an effort to shore up the women's vote for Romney Ryan, Paul Ryan's going to take his shirt off and pour a pitcher of water down his chest.
Corn syrup.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so he's just going to oil himself
vile.
Up.
How vile. What a disgusting thought.
He's just going to be all oiled up and he's just going to rip his shirt off like he's a Hulkamaniac or something. Yeah. You know? That'd be hilarious. And then you know what? You know how Joe Biden should respond to that? Joe Biden should rip his shirt off.
That'd be beautiful.
The entire presidential political process just disintegrating right before our eyes. on national television.
The vice it already has, man. It really has.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I've never seen. Well, I shouldn't say never, but I mean, this is really the height, I believe, of panic. I mean, I just let's face it, the panic is far, far outweighing the severity of what actually happened last week. It's just, it's out of control. And, I've never seen panic more overblown than this. You know, at least in context.
It's not so much that there hasn't been panic before. There just hasn't been such a pronounced means of expressing that panic and joining together with your fellow whatever group you happen to align yourself with to, you know, to shout to the heavens about that panic.
Yeah.
To share in that panic.
Yeah, and I think if you're not panicking, then you got to be some kind of you're in denial or something like that. That's the vibe I'm getting, because I'm not panicked. I'm not entirely worried. If Mitt Romney was 5 points ahead in the national polls, if Mitt Romney was ahead in Ohio and Virginia and some of these other critical swing states, I'd be a little more panicked. But the polls don't correlate with the panic.
Yeah.
At least the polls that I've seen, and I've been looking at them feverishly over the last several days. We'll see. Hey, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, we're back. I want to get into this this positioning of the president recently, where I think over the last couple of days, there's been a very definitive shift in terms of the president's messaging. And we've seen it with Bill Clinton. We've seen it with the president himself in the Diane Sawyer interview. And it's extraordinarily refreshing to me. This is what the president has been saying the last 24, 48 hours has been fantastic. There's a new video that's out on Talking Points Memo where if the president brings this kind of enthusiasm to the next debate, it's not even going to be a contest. And I think he ought to. I mean, I think he can be on the stump Barack Obama at the debate.
Yeah.
You know, he said today, and this is only part of it, but and there's an entire video on Talking Points Memo that covers the entire thing. But he said, about Mitt Romney, suddenly he loves the middle class. Can't stop talking enough about him. He loves Medicare, loves teachers. He even loves the most important parts of Obamacare. What happened? Now, what does he have to say when this new version of Mitt Romney about all these things he's actually promised to do as president? Tax breaks for outsources, never heard of such a thing. Saying he would cut back on teachers, doesn't ring a bell. I mean, he's going through like all the positions that Mitt Romney reversed course on. And then you couple that with yesterday on Diane Sawyer on ABC News, president said this.
The one thing that I think people, Republicans as well as Democrats, can say is that there has been consistency with me from the time that I started running for president to today. And there will be consistency all the way through the next 4 years of my presidency. People will know where I stand, what I believe, what I'm fighting for. And that's part of leadership.
That's right. I mean, I think that's the best case for reelecting the president right now. I mean, there are a lot of good cases for reelecting the president. I think that's got to be the top shelf one. We know what this guy is going to do. We know how he's going to govern. We know what his successes are.
No, we don't. We don't know anything about him. He's a secret Muslim and was never properly vetted, and he's from Kenya and whatever.
By the way, you talk about five-dimensional chess. The guy was talking to Diane Sawyer and texting at the same time.
Was he really?
No. It was your text that came through as we were playing that clip. Yeah, I get
No, I was not. No, I just happened to have my phone sitting next to me.
I thought it would have been funny, though, if he'd been, like, talking to Diane Sawyer and texting at the same time, just, like, completely multitasking.
Actually, I'm still laughing at the fact that – at you saying that that he was on yesterday with Diane Sawyer. That's apparently ABC's new really crappy news show, Yesterday.
Yesterday, that's
it's
right.
The Yesterday Show.
Well, he was, and I think he was pretty tough on Mitt Romney. I think they're going down this road now of basically accusing Mitt Romney of being a liar, which is appropriate.
He is a liar.
But I think the contrast that they're drawing between the president and Mitt Romney is critical. I mean, Mitt Romney's all over the place. He's this guy one day. He's that guy the other day. He's moderate Mitt one day. He's severely conservative Mitt the next day.
You know, the interesting thing, though, is that something that I was thinking about, and this goes back to something that Charlie Pierce wrote about in Esquire. You know, he brought up kind of the race and xenophobia issue, the sort of subtle racism of people looking at Barack Obama and saying, and you and I know we've talked about this, and I think each of us has written about it too. People looking at Barack Obama and saying, you know, we voted for him and we feel good about that fact, but, you know, he's a politician. He's not the sort of savior that we were expecting, the sort of post-racial messiah. And now it's like, yeah, you know what? He's had his time. He's had his 4 years. You know, let's go ahead and let the regular guy who looks like a president take over. And I think that there are a lot of people out there who believe that.
Oh, yeah.
And what was interesting about when the polls changed so swiftly for Romney, I couldn't help but wonder, one of the first things I thought was, I remembered that Charlie Pierce column. And I thought, I wonder if there are a bunch of people out there who really are sort of looking for an excuse to vote for Romney. You know, and quite frankly, Romney had given them nothing up to that point. Nothing. You know, I mean, a gaffe after gaffe, a completely detached, awkward plutocrat, with money in the Caymans, who had, you know, who harvested companies and just had no sort of connection to the average middle class American. And so people really had kind of, I don't say no choice but to vote for Obama, but they either stayed out of it or they're like, well, look, you know what, we'll vote for Obama. And maybe there was, after watching this fiery performance and watching the sort of nice guy Mitt suddenly come back, there were people out there who were like, all right, look, you know what, now I've got my excuse. He's not that bad. He's not terrible. Now I can at least with a clear conscience say that I can vote for Mitt Romney.
Well, I mean, that may be. But I don't.
That's my big conspiracy theory for the day.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't see it bearing out in the polling. I still think that, I mean, you just can't erase, you know, 2 years of, or 2 years plus of whatever character Mitt Romney was playing before the debate with just one thing. And I think there's still enough time to go, or time left in the election, in the process here, to kind of whittle away at the Mitt Romney that appeared at that debate.
But you can do that again. You can do that if there are people out there looking for a reason to vote for Romney, who really want a reason to vote for Romney. They've been looking for it. You know, and yes, they're going with Obama or they're not going at all, but suddenly Mitt Romney gives them the absolution that they've needed. To be able to say, okay, he looks presidential, he might be okay, fine, I'm good with that.
Well, I can understand people supporting Mitt Romney just because he looks the part. I mean, we've talked about that a lot. But I don't think there are undecided people just desperate for something to, you know, some excuse to vote for Mitt Romney. I think I think the undecided people are simply and mostly uninformed, and they're also contrarians, and they're also insufferable.
No, that's those things. Exactly. Bill Maher's thing a couple weeks ago about how, you know, the news networks fawn over these undecideds. They put them in a room like a focus group as if they're, you know, as if they're the Rosetta Stone. Mm-hmm. And they're idiots.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't made a freaking decision by now, you're a moron. You know, if you plan to vote, if you don't plan to vote, if you don't give a crap, then fine. Who cares? But if you're somebody who plans to vote and you're still undecided at this point, after everything you've seen, you're not waiting for some magic bullet. You're not waiting for, like, you know, you're not waiting for the Whopper to come back with all your research. You know, that's crap. You just don't know, and you're dumb, and no one should give a crap what you think.
Honestly, what I think we're observing right now, or at least in the early part of this week, are people giving Romney kudos for a good debate performance? I think there's a lot of people who are conflating solid debate performance when they're asked by pollsters, solid debate performance and who they're really going to support. And the reason that we're seeing this big shift is simply that, like, well, Romney did really well. I guess he's in the lead. It's not so much reflective of a personal choice, but reflecting what the conventional wisdom becomes, what the narrative becomes.
It is, but there it is. That's what I mean.
Yeah, but I don't think it's lasting. I still don't believe that Mitt Romney is going to win this election. I think the president's going to win with all but two states that he won in 2008. I think he's going to win all the same states. I don't know if he's going to win North Carolina, and he's certainly not going to win Indiana. But I think he's going to win Virginia. He's going to win Florida. He's going to win Ohio. He's going to win Nevada and Colorado. I think we're going to see a closer than usual race. I think we're going to see similar numbers in Arizona that we see in North Carolina. I think Arizona is going to. I don't think the president's going to win Arizona, but I think he's going to come close. I think he's going to come just as close as he came, or that he's going to come to winning North Carolina. I think we're going to see very similar point spreads or vote spreads in both of those states. So I mean, I think that with 3 weeks to go, the kind of narrative page turning that we've constantly seen, where one news story trumps the other one and we're on to something else and we don't even remember what happened the week before, I think that's going to continue over the next 3 weeks.
That's what I mean when I say musical chairs.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I mean. It all depends on who happens to be in the right place and have the right narrative when the music stops. That's the way our media operates now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's going to work to the president's favor because I think the Romney campaign has seen its high water mark. I don't think that the president is going to make the same mistakes he made in the first debate. I think we're going to see a much different Barack Obama on Tuesday than who we saw, last Wednesday, at least in terms of how he presents these details, what his messaging is. I think and Joe Biden is going to kind of be the sentinel of all of that starting tonight. And I think as a consequence, the entire narrative is going to change in all of this. So we got to take one more break for Bubble Genius. Back after this. Oh, hey, hi. Show every week is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. They have the best bath and body products you will ever, ever try. So I urge you. Like we do here, we buy all of our bath and body products from BubbleGenius.com. We get all of our soaps and all of our stuff. Well, actually, we don't buy them. They just send them to us. And so we use them. But if we didn't, if they weren't the sponsor of the show and they weren't sending us all of their products to try for free, we would absolutely buy them. Because that's what you have to do if you want to support liberal independent businesses owned by women who create fantastic vegan products, and you want to buy from BubbleGenius.com. And they have a great sense of humor, too. So here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
It's that time of year again. There's a snap in the air. The veil between this world and the next is thinning, and ghouls of all descriptions come out of the woodwork.
And at Bubble Genius, it's time to scare up some bath time fun with a kooky collection of spooky suds.
Need something frightful for your Halloween party guests? Get them Halloween with a terrifying selection of bubbly body parts, including our anatomically correct human heart soap.
Need something cool to celebrate Day of the Dead? Alter your consciousness and your bathtub with our hand-painted sugar skull soaps, large and small. Each is a one-of-a-kind work of art.
If you want to bring home some really blood-curdling bubbles, think Election Day! We've got your Obamas and Romneys right here, and even a little Santorum.
Ew.
One-third of the profits donated to progressive causes.
Halloween, Day of the Dead, and Election Day. Bubble Genius can suds you up no matter what the occasion.
We are Bubble Genius, and we approve this message.
BubbleGenius.com.
shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. I got to tell you, just on a
promo. I love how you've got like the great space coaster music on the way into the Bubble Genius commercials, and then like the sort of cheesy, you know, non-ASCAPable Sex and the City theme on the way out.
Right.
Somewhere between that and the old Dave Allen at Large thing.
Well, you know, we have two of those, and I never used the other one. This is the other one.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
I never used that one either. I ought to use both. I ought to interchange them. But I like to get the podcast thing in there, too, the iTunes pitch, because we need more subscribers on iTunes. Always, we can never have enough subscribers on iTunes. By the way, thank you for listening to the show and downloading the show so many times. We've hit record download numbers of the last, I don't know, the last four or five shows, probably four or five times as many downloads as we typically get. So here's the other case that the campaign, the Obama campaign can make. I mean, this is, I watched the War Room, that great documentary about George Stephanopoulos and James Carville, 1992 mm-hmm. campaign, and Al Gore did this great speech, this great stump speech during that campaign, where he talked about all the things that were bad during the George H.W. Bush administration, all the things that were down that ought to be up, and all the things that were up that ought to be down. Well, I compiled a similar list, but reversing everything. All the things that should be up are up, and all the things that are down, that should be down are down. For the last 4 years of the Obama administration, job creation is up, inflation is down, business profits are up, consumer debt is down, American auto sales are up, middle class taxes are down, prescription drug savings are up, the deficit is down, stock market is up, unemployment is down, consumer confidence is up, spending growth is down, GDP is up, wars are down, home values are up, bin Laden is down. These are things. Now, the one complaint that I've been repeating, I think a lot of people have been repeating, is that the Obama campaign, the president himself, and the White House Communications Department has been terrible, terrible, terrible at bragging about their own successes. But there are so many of them to talk about. I don't know. I can't quite wrap my head around what their hang-up is, why they can't adequately say, look at all the great things that have happened. Is there, maybe there's some sort of polling, maybe there's some sort of focus group at somewhere along the line said, you know what, people are still hurting and they're going to be turned off if you're saying that things are really actually really good. But I don't see it. If job creation is up, then talk about job creation. I mean, they do. I mean, the president does famously say, you know, there's been 5 million new jobs created in the last 30 months. But you need to hammer it. Inflation. Yes, inflation is at an all-time low. I think during the Bush administration, it was up around 6. Now it's down around 1. Business profits are skyrocketing. Consumer debt is way down again. American auto sales are way up. These are all verifiable things. I mean, you look up the numbers. These are all accurate statistics.
Right.
Just today, a brand new study was released. Unemployment claims are at a 4-year low. This was in the Huffington Post today. It's the lowest level since February of 2008. On Thursday, for example, the government said first-time applications for benefits hit a 4.5-year low. I mean, that's something to be proud of. I think that's something that's positive.
It is, and I think that there's a way to sell that, and I think that they've done it, not as forcefully as I know a lot of people would like. You know, they've said, look, we still have a very long way to go, but these are good signposts along the way, very good.
Yeah. And one of the signposts that I wrote about in the Huffington Post and on the Daily Banter this week was the deficit reduction. I mean, if any president had gotten to the end of his first term and had cut the deficit by $300 billion, as Barack Obama has, that'd be like the centerpiece of the stump speech. We cut the deficit. But I think there's a little tentativeness there going on with regards to mentioning the deficit, because no one wants to mention the actual deficit figure, because taken out of context, it still looks pretty big. So you don't want to say, well, the deficit is $1.1 trillion. Mm-hmm. But I do think you can successfully say that you've cut the deficit, and the deficit has been significantly reduced. I mean, $300 billion deficit reduction, $200 billion of that in the last year alone, that's a pretty big deal. And they have said, and the president has said, that he inherited a huge deficit from George W. Bush. And that is true. George W. Bush.
No, he has been really good about saying that. And, you know, I'm sorry, but I do think that while I know that the sort of instinctive reaction is stop blaming Bush, because, it's been obviously quite a while since Bush has been in office. But still, it really does make sense to say, you know, look, this is what I inherited. This is how bad things were. This is what happened. And I know that they've done this in a lot of ways to play up the fact that not so much that this is the way things used to be, but this is the way Romney and Ryan want to go. This is what they want to go back to. Yeah. This is the kind of thinking. It's the kind of thinking that got us into trouble. You sort of look forward, but you look back by looking forward.
Well, I want to get into that after one last break. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Just a small town girl.
Yeah, I tweeted about this today. I think one thing people tend to overlook when it comes to Mitt Romney, this guy is a corporate CEO who's hiding his income, who's hiding his wealth in offshore accounts. He's notoriously outsourced jobs, American jobs overseas. I mean, in the 47% video, he admits to buying a factory in China that employs basically 20,000 sweatshop workers.
For a pittance.
For a pittance. And he actually uses the word pittance regarding their pay.
Of course he does, because that word came out of, you know, Tom Joad's Dust Bowl, and that's what... that's the kind of America that Romney remembers. It's a pittance. Everything is swell.
I'm staggered at the idea that 3 years after, or even 2 years after this massive, massive economic meltdown, gigantic recession, deepest recession since the Great Depression, and we're still to this day learning how deep it actually was, that people are turning around and saying, well, yeah, let's vote for the guy who kind of represents all of the nefarious corporate things that caused the recession in the first place, that caused the economic meltdown.
Speaking of, you know, I talked about Taibbi earlier. That was one of Taibbi's best columns so far, having to do with the election from a few weeks back, where he said, he's like, look, you know, love Barack Obama or hate him, you have to wonder how in the hell Obama is not kicking the living crap out of Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Romney stands for every single thing that got us into this mess.
It's like, and I'm not directly comparing Mitt Romney to a Nazi. I'm not saying that, but I'm going to draw a comparison here. Be like 2 years after World War II, the Germans electing another fascist to run their country. You know, it's that kind of amnesia, that kind of short attention span. I mean, let's call it what it is. It is stupidity that people say, you know what, bunch of corporate CEOs on Wall Street, bunch of people, you know, dealing in credit default swaps and shady investments and hiding income and all kinds of malfeasance. That guy causes a massive economic meltdown impacting just about everybody. We're still clawing our way out of it now. Let's make that one of those guys president. It's astonishing to me.
We're a dumb country.
We really, really are. At least, half of us.
Well,
right,
welcome to the party.
And
welcome to the Chez Pazienza party.
And we're gonna elect this guy president. He's Mitt Romney, corporate CEO Mitt Romney with Cayman Islands bank accounts, who refuses to release his financial history. Who's part of who's the CEO of a corporation that, you know, by his own admission, hired sweatshop workers in China. He's this close to the presidency. in some national polls, he's actually leading to the White House. We're going to elect this guy? Are you kidding? I mean, if he was some guy who's, you know, been in the Senate for 10 years and or some governor, some, you know, like Rick Perry type, and people are all enthused because he's going to overturn Roe v. Wade and roll back Obamacare and all these things. I can kind of see that. I can kind of see Republicans getting behind that. But you're getting behind a guy who represents everything that created the recession and the economic meltdown in the first place. That is astonishing. You have to really severely, severely have some kind of mental incompetency, some kind of serious bias against, a president who's center left, but who has, in fact, adopted a lot of Republican policies. Individual mandate, cap and trade, do the list. You have to really hate that guy if you're going to vote for a corporate CEO who's been endorsed by Donald Trump, another corporate CEO. You're going to vote for that guy to be president of the United States. We're going to welcome back to bubble economies. Welcome back to artificial value inflation followed by crash and burn, followed by bailout.
I'm curious to know if it's the equivalent, though, of swallowing the blue pill in the Matrix. You know, if you you go back to the bubble economy, but Jesus, again, we've talked about this. Everything returns to normal. It's not quite so crazy. Wall Street's already doing well, but Wall Street goes completely crazy, goes insane. They love every single second of it. Suddenly, you know, maybe things do start turning around. Who knows? It's all fake. It's all BS, but, you know, it's comforting.
Well, there's something like to be said.
It's taking the blue. It's not reality, but it's taking the blue pill.
You're totally onto something there, because I think what I've observed, and I think what a lot of people have observed, is I think people are anxious for the recession or the impact of the recession to subside. You know, for the recovery to get to the point where, yeah, we can go back blowing money on on expensive meals and putting everything on credit cards and using our house as an ATM. We want to go back to – we can't wait till we get back to that, because that's what it was like in the good old days before the recession, when people were spending more than they had and racking up massive credit debt. We want to go back to that because that was the fun times before the crash.
It is true that you can – you know, the human psyche can really only handle so much reality, so much, especially when that reality is depressing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hardwired into us that we want to put that aside and start partying.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and the pendulum has always swung back and forth between the highs, the ecstatic highs and the crushing lows.
What happens? Why do people end up gaining weight again after going on an extensive diet?
They get because down. They're really hungry and they want, and they decide to reward themselves.
That's exactly right. They get
sure,
to a point.
I've done that so many times in my life. I've had so many moments where it's been like, you know, where it's been like, even with work, where I've got so much work to do, and I'm pulling 15 to 18, honestly, 18-hour days, really, really cramming. And what I'll do is I will be so exhausted that I'll reward myself by taking, like, you know, a couple of days off that I really can't take. Now, it hasn't happened recently, but, you know, I've done that before where, you know, you take a couple of days off, and then what happens is you push yourself by taking those days. You wind up pushing yourself into a position where you're once again forced to cram.
That's right. That's right. And the same thing happens when people diet. Exactly. What they do is they get down to their ideal weight and they say, well, look, I look great. Give me some cake. You know, I can now afford to have big hunks of cake. Give me some big hunks of cake.
Or they're tired of not spending money. They're tired of living paycheck to paycheck, and they want to reward themselves.
That's
you
right.
Know, that happens all the time.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to be restrained with your spending. It's easy to accept that credit card offer that comes in the mail and then to start, you know, then to max it out and to say, oh, well, I've maxed that one out. Let's get another one. And then to max that one out again.
Screw that.
It's base instinct. It's like, well, yeah, it's kind of self-indulgent. But that's what we're all about. Because, you know, and then this gets, I mean, I don't want to get too deep down this rabbit hole, But, I mean, we're encouraged to do it. I mean, we're bombarded with encouragement to do that, to do just that. I mean, just after 9/11, go out shopping. You know, or every television commercial we see, oh, look at this. Ah, you stink. You need this or that. Because, you know, in order to be valued or to feel some sort of self-worth, you need to have this car. Because look at this rich woman driving that Cadillac through that tunnel. Wow.
This is what gets you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's, oh my God, that's the message of every single ad that's aimed toward men.
And it's not just that. I mean, there's an appeal to all kinds of self-indulgence. And so that's, I mean, then that's easy. That's so easy.
And you know what's fun? Again, the message, the overwhelming message of all of that is you deserve it.
You deserve it. That's right.
You deserve this. This luxury that is going to bankrupt you, that's going to just be a freaking albatross around your neck. Yeah. You deserve that.
That's right.
You've earned it.
That's right.
I love that. You've earned it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember
all the time, dude. I go out and I've spent money before, and it's been like, oh my God, you know. Later on, I want to kick myself in the ass, but at the time, oh, it's great. Are you kidding me? And I deserve it. Damn it.
Remember before the recession, there was that show on MTV. It might still be on now, called My Sweet 16 or whatever it was. It was about
My Super Sweet 16. Absolutely, the most horrific people you'll ever see, even worse than Honey Boo Boo, and like a serial killer like committing family annihilation on those people would be the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
There was a culture that surrounded that show and other similar shows that, you know, you wonder, well, God, how is anyone going to live up to that? I mean, how can – that's the kind of standard that that's being pumped into the heads of adolescents right now. And right on the heels of that, great recession, economic meltdown. No one can buy anything, but that seed is still planted in there. To a certain extent, there's a considerable faction of American voters who want to go back to that comfortable, safe, white Republican guy who's going to feed us a bunch of sugary snacks.
No, I think
rhetorical
you're right.
Sugary snacks. It's going to make it's like comfort food. It's like Republican presidents are comfort food.
Yeah, Republican presidents are meatloaf.
Yeah.
Meatloaf and mac and cheese. And it's good. And again, the other thing to keep in mind is that when they're in office, because the Republicans are so absolutely insane whenever they're out of office, they are so dedicated to doing anything they can, anything they have to get back in office, the insanity lets up. Mm-hmm. Because the Republicans, quite frankly, just shut the doors and turn the lights out on the Democrats and don't let them do anything. So they're kind of a non-entity. And, yeah, they get us into all kinds of horrific crap, wars and stuff like that. But for the most part, there's oddly enough, at home, there is this sort of calm that no one can really do anything about it anyway. So you're just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah. Well, and they also – Republicans have become masters at controlling the narrative, whether it's through hectoring or whining or whatever you want to call it. They've got the media by the nuts. And the thing is – I mean, look at just one indicator of this, and that is the federal budget deficit and the national debt. I raise this challenge in every forum that I have access to: Twitter, Facebook, Daily Banter, Sulia, everything. Name the last president who ended his term with a deficit reduction. Name the last Republican president who ended his, you know, whether it was one term or two terms, with a reduction in the deficit. You have to go back to Dwight Eisenhower to do that. Every Republican president since Dwight Eisenhower has actually spiked the deficit, spiked the national debt. I'm talking about Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, for God's sake, to the extent that he was only president for, what, 2.5 years? Also, of course, George Bush Sr., George W. Bush, all these guys. I mean, the end of George Bush's first term alone turned a $200 billion surplus into a $400 billion deficit in his first 4 years alone. by the end of his 8 years, turned a $200 billion surplus into a $1.2 trillion deficit. That was George W. Bush. Tell me how Mitt Romney's policies are any different from George W. Bush's. I'm talking about it in terms of specifically deficit reduction and government spending, whether it's on tax cuts or what have you, unnecessary wars. There's no difference whatsoever. This guy is going to do the same thing George W. Bush did, and they're going to be like, who, us? What? Deficit? We never complained about the deficit during Obama's 4 years. It's exactly what's going to happen. These guys are scam artists, and they will absolutely do the same thing. Because why? Because it feels good.
And trust.
Because this is what they do. This is the comfortable... This is the warm sweater, the comfort food that the Republicans bring. Because there aren't Republicans to say stop raising the deficit. You know, stop increasing the deficit. They'll keep doing it. They're going to drop all of their deficit hawkery like a bad habit. Mitt Romney's elected on January 20th, 2013. What deficit? I don't know about a deficit.
Yep.
Well, there's still a lot of time to go. I still am quite confident that this guy isn't gonna win, Mitt Romney. I still think the president's gonna be reelected. I think the campaign is supercharged at this point. I think it's laser focused on winning. The president said on the Tom Joyner radio show yesterday, he quoted that great meme that was going around 4 years ago. Everybody chill the bleep out. I got this.
Yep.
He said that. So I think there's a lot to be said on that front. I think he does have this. A guy who defeated the biggest Democratic political machine in modern American history, the Obama campaign, defeated Hillary Clinton after coming back. I mean, I think Obama was down 20 points at some point, maybe 30 points, against Hillary Clinton 4 years ago. Came back and won. I think bigger odds have been defeated. And he's only either tied or maybe a point behind Mitt Romney. So I think that's... a lot to be said for that. Hey, we got a lot of stuff, a lot of politics still to talk about. We're going to do that on the after party. And I'm going to release the after party, you know, same time as the free show once again this week because so many timely issues to talk about. So thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you on the after party.
Bye-bye.